I am so happy to be here today. I'm happy to be with you because you are so beautiful. You are so lovely. You have a glow about you, a glow that you can see with the eye. It is so good. Even if you're from Texas, you are still good. And dear Eva, she is love itself. And Kimberly, you're not an earth angel. You are an angel, a true angel. And we appreciate you being here. All of you, you have made this week so wonderful. And we are relating one to another in a wonderful way. We are to celebrate the joy of relationship. Why not at this moment stand up and tell two other people within the next minute why their joy makes you so joyful? Go ahead. Do that. Okay, it's so joyful, but the minute is up. Our joy is so great and so tremendous, it has no ending. We are always, always in joy. And now, the one who brought joy into our lives, Judy and Jeshua.
Beloved sisters and brothers, ones of the Most High, companions, friends, whom I have known many, many times, I am the one known by you and by others as Mary of Magdala. Helpmate to one Yeshua. You have been speaking this week about joy. You have been speaking about how it feels to be in joy. Yeshua was my joy. The Christ of Yeshua and my knowing of my Christ came together in a great flame of energy. We knew it from the very beginning when we met. Now, to tell you a bit of my history, I was very fortunate to be raised in a family that knew some wealth, monetary, earthly wealth. My uncle was Joseph of Arimathea. He had many ships. He had mineral tin mines in what you now call Great Britain. And he had the ships that would bear the ore back and forth. He was very astute at merchandising, and the family before him had been as well. So that I knew a life of ease, and I knew a life that allowed me to study with masters in different parts of the world. I knew of the Essene community at Mount Carmel, where Yeshua studied, but that is not where I took my learning. I had what you would call now the private tutors that taught me at home for the first 12 years. And then after that, I was gifted with the means to travel to other lands and study with masters in other places. And I took it all for granted. I thought this was how everyone, if they chose, could study and learn of the higher realms. It was in India that I first met Yeshua. He had gone there to study. I was there studying as well. And I was sent in to play what you would call now the meditation music, to play for this esteemed one, as he was in that time, because ones knew the prophecy and ones believed by his training that he had had with the Essenes, ones knew that this was a special being. So he was sent to study with masters in what you now call the Far East. So as spirit would have it, we came together to study under the same master teacher. And we met, and there was a certain feeling that you get when you meet a loved one. There's a certain knowing that you have, a feeling that comes from the heart and draws you to the other one. And if it is your first experience, you wonder, what is happening? Why does this one have all of the light around them? Why does this one speak directly to my heart? Why is this one so good looking, as he was? So I was drawn to him, and he was drawn to me. But because of his teaching that he had been told that he was to be Rabbi, Messiah to his people, he said, this couldn't be. No, love of woman was not for him. Okay. So we met, and there was a feeling, a knowing of attraction. There was also a feeling of, I don't think so, on his part. My feeling, I will speak as an aside here, but I do feel that the female gender knows certain things of the heart before, this is general nature, before the male perhaps gets the message of the heart from here to here. Because, again, a generalization, so it is none of you, of course, but the male seems to be more centered here, at least in the younger years. Then as the process of taking in the world, everything around, and parsing it in a way to understand the true heart of it, by the time you get a bit of the silver in the hair, the menfolk catch up with us. But that is just my take on it. So it was put aside for a while. We felt the attraction, we felt, well, I did. Yes, and he did also, but it was not something that he was ready to act upon. And I understood that because there was training, there was studies yet to be done. So it was not something that we could act upon right away. But as spirit will have it, our paths came back again, back together again, meeting back in the area of Jerusalem. Not Jerusalem exactly, but the outskirts of it. And at that point, there was a feeling that there was work to do together. And it was not just on my part. I understood this early on, but on Yeshua's part, he was beginning to get the message that perhaps there was a helpmate to help him with this. And perhaps she could be rather attractive, which I tried to be, and succeeded rather well. So that there was an agreement on our part that we would at least speak with each other and share some of the background. In the meantime, after I had studied in some of the far lands with masters and had learned much that there was to know beyond the physical, much that there was in the ancient teachings about the energy of the body and what you call the aura, the energy around the body, and the connection in the quiet times known as meditation, known as the music. I was very good at playing the stringed instrument. I don't know what you would call it in this day and time, but I could play very soft, meditative music that would, if you really tuned in with it, you would be transported somewhere in meditation. So I came back from my studies, and I came back to my family, my home, and my uncle. And it was then felt, because I was 20, going on 21, that it was time that I should find a mate and do my job of having children. Okay. Well, that was fine with me, but I had in my mind someone that I wanted to be with. And he was not exactly in my circle of friends at that point. So I looked around to see what I could do. Because I told my uncle and my mother and my father that I was not ready to settle down yet. Well, mainly because Yeshua was not ready to settle down yet. Okay. And I was biding my time, waiting. And they said, well, it would be good if you went into the larger city, Jerusalem, and see if you can apprentice yourself to someone that would be to your liking, something that you might like to do while you are waiting. They didn't put it in those words, but that's how I understood it. Okay. So I went into the big city. And I could not believe what I saw. I could not believe that women were used for pleasure with no thought as to their feeling, to who they were, any other talents. Women were used just for their body. And they were paid the golden coins for it. But there was no understanding of the individual. Women, families with small children, had no place to stay. They would sleep by the roadside, a family huddled together. I had no idea that people lived like that. That is not what I had seen growing up. I had been raised with plenty of servants, ones who would help me with any little thing that I needed. And I thought every little girl would grow up that way. And then I saw that this was not true. I saw that women of my age looked twice the age because of what they had had to do to earn some money for their family, for the brood of small ones that they had hanging onto their skirt. I had no idea until finally, you know, I was set loose into the big city to make my way. And my heart went out to them because I made friends with some of them. The same as some of you have stopped and have talked with the homeless ones in this day and time, with some of the ones who are women just to give pleasure to the male. And some of them became my friends. This not only was a shock to my mind, but it was a shock to my body. And I could not pass them by. So I went to my uncle and I said, I need to buy a house. I need to set up my future. I need a certain amount of money to buy a house in Jerusalem, on the outskirts of Jerusalem, and to establish myself. So, without asking me any further questions, he gave me, I was a favored niece, and so he gave me the house that I was asking for. So what did I do? I invited the women to come and live there, the ones who had no home, the ones who were out on the street and knew only life on the street. And I gave them their own room to do as they would wish to do. But the beauty of it was they did not wish to do the old life of just providing pleasure for the man. They wanted to study. They wanted to know what I knew. And so we studied together. I taught them to read a little bit so that they could learn on their own. I taught them how to count up on what you call the, I think, abacus now, something like that, so that they would know how much value in the coins they had, so that they would value themselves and be able to pay their way, not that way, unless that was all that was left, but they found that it wasn't. They found that they had the singing voice. They wanted to play the musical instruments. We had quite a musical talent in the house. It was a happy place. And there were ones who had not had a chance to do much with the cooking because they didn't have much except scraps thrown to them. And now we had some coins. We could buy some actual meat and vegetables, and they learned to cook. Enough that then they were able to sell that which they had cooked. So they found that they had talents. Different ones had different talents. There were ones who liked the fabric and liked to make the clothing for others. So we had quite a little community going where they were able to do much more than just to be beautiful for a short time, perhaps. You have in your holy writings the story of me and the house of ill repute. Well, the house was of ill repute to begin with, but it soon changed its flavor. And if there were ones who did not have a place to stay, then we found another house nearby, which again took in the women so that they were not just in the street, so that they could do something that brought some measure of value to them. Your holy fathers, as they put together the story of me, they did not exactly paint the truth. Some of the truth, but not all of the truth. And that is something that, now that I have the opportunity, I want to set straight, to let you know. Because I had had the advantage of traveling, I was able to share with the women the sights of other places and to give them what had been for them a very narrow view of the world and just getting through day by day, to tell them of the great temples in India, of the music, and to play for them some of the music, to allow them to know the value of life, not just to have to scrape together enough to keep themselves and perhaps the small ones breathing for the next day. In the beginning for them, that was all they knew. And yes, there were times when we had to have the meeting to explain that there was a greater value than just fighting over a small piece of meat, because that was all they knew in the beginning. But the older ones were able to share with them the greater value of being, of what they had, the talents that they had. So that which has been painted as being just the women of the night, oh, they were women of the day as well, and some of you are here in this day, and you have made your way in this day and time as well, because there are ones of you who have started with perhaps not as much as some others, and yet you have found a talent that you had and that you could use to provide for yourself and perhaps the small ones as they came along. You have found value in what you are, not just what you could provide for a fleeting hour or so, but for all time. So you have come into this lifetime and you have had a memory. And this applies to those of you who may have the male body in this lifetime. There is a knowing as well that you have lived a lifetime as the female gender as well. So when I speak of that time in history, there is a knowing that you can understand. And those of you with the female bodies, you know very well how it could be, or perhaps was, and now you find yourself sitting here and being valued for the love that you give, the music that you play, the smile that you give, and the, I will not call teaching, but the feeling that you can bring out of each one as you are perhaps in a group, and you can speak to their greater quality, their higher quality. So yes, it comes full circle. And it is wonderful, is it not? So I did that while Yeshua was doing what he needed to be doing. And then there came a time when we were freed to be together. The teaching that he did with the multitudes, was I part of that? You'd better believe I was. I was part of the women who provided the logistics for the multitudes, because as he is fond of saying, he had good press. He had very good advance of one's runners who went and said, you know, Yeshua, this person is speaking and what he says is different than what our religious leaders are saying. He's Jewish. He's from the Jewish tradition, but he's got a different take on it. And so ones came. And it didn't hurt any that there were some miracles that happened, some healings that happened, because ones would come who wanted healing. And if they had enough faith, and if they had had enough of the indoctrination of the good press, they believed. He also had a charismatic energy around him. And so ones came, ones were healed, the word went out, more people came, the word went out farther, more people came. And there were women who had to provide for the logistics of feeding this great group of people who came to hear what he had to say. And some of you who were part of his entourage with helping with the logistics, you are sitting here in this day and time. You bet. Same for you. Same for many of you. You helped with the multitudes when there needed to be the sharing of food. Now, on that day and time, you have seen the raiment that was worn and the heavy flowing cloak that often was worn. And inside the cloak, there were very deep pockets on both sides. And you would have several loaves of bread in the pocket and perhaps a round of cheese in the other one. And when it was time to eat, you know, out would come the loaf of bread and slice off and so forth. And some of the families and friends, they were into sharing with family and friends. Not you, just my family. So that the women, who were very strong, would go amongst the various families that were gathered, and they would say, how about sharing? There's a group of family in front of you. They don't have as much to eat. And Yeshua would be pleased. You knew psychology. Yeshua would be pleased if you shared. And so they would entertain a new thought of sharing. New thought. And so it was most necessary that women, and also some of the men, allowed the logistics of the multitude to have some order and to share. It was a teaching, a very practical teaching. And it caught on. That was the miracle. It caught on. But yes. So I would be part of the logistics. Just a common woman, supposedly, just to be there with Yeshua because I liked his energy. Besides, I thought he was good looking. And I liked the stories that he would tell. And if there were not a whole multitude of people around, oftentimes in the evening we would sit around the campfire. And some of you menfolk, you were there, sitting around the campfire. And this was most enjoyable for the womenfolk. As a whole, I speak in generalities because it was not completely cut and dried this way, but as a tendency. The menfolk wanted to parse everything, wanted to be in the mind as to, well, how can this be and why? Why did that miracle of healing happen? And all of the questions that they would ask, and they would be into, well, you have the story, and it is not very far off the truth, of the question of how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. Okay, the menfolk were into wondering, wanting to know, it has to be this many, it has to be this many. And the women folk said, ah, be quiet. It happens even in this day and time. It happens. So after a while with the teachings that Yeshua was doing, and it was becoming quite obvious that the ones of the Orthodox, I guess is what you would call, Jewish leaders, the teachers, were not happy with what he was teaching, because although it was grounded in the Jewish teachings and was grounded in a lot of the principles that the Jewish leaders and the religious ones wanted to put forth, there was a certain adherence to the strict law. And Yeshua was going more from the heart, loving, accepting, bringing forth the love from people one to another, and doing healing, even on the Sabbath, which was a complete sin in those days. But he would explain, would the Father not want to see this one whole, no matter what day on the calendar it says? But that didn't cut any cloth with them, because it says right here, thou shalt do no work on the Sabbath. For God created everything, and on the seventh day he rested. So therefore, you do no work on that day. And they equated his healing with work. Now, it was not work. He tried to explain that. But it didn't matter, you see, how much he tried to explain, because he was coming from the heart. And, okay, I will say it, but it is my generality. They did not have much heart. So it was hard for them to understand. They had to go by the letter of the law, what had been passed down to them. You have the same thing happening in this day and time. You have your religious leaders, ones who are well-versed in the holy writings, and yet to ask of them, what does this really mean? How do you walk this talk? I have heard that saying. How do you walk the message in everyday life? And sometimes they are hard-pressed to give an answer. So it goes around again. But it has been pointed out to me, and I do believe that there is a new way that is arising, with ones wanting to come from the heart. Ones of the male persuasion living from the place of the heart, allowing the mind to be used as from the direction of the heart. It is called love. So there is a change afoot. You have the message that this is a time of change, and it is. There is a return to love once again. And it is because it is subtle. It does not seem to be so obvious, and yet it is alive and well. So as Yeshua traveled around, walking from village to village, sometimes riding, but not too often, most often just walking and speaking with anyone who would come. He loves people. You have felt that in this week. He loves you. He loves being with you. It is the same now as it was many, many years ago. We came together. And we married. Now your holy fathers do not want you to know that. After all, Yeshua was pure. Direct descendant from God the Father. The only Son of God. Well, that's not true. All of you are sons and daughters of the higher power. That is why you are here. And this is what he taught. So, of course, he was going to get into trouble with the authorities. But, as is always the case, when you find your true love, we came together and it was heaven on earth. Did we ever squabble? A few times, yes, because I had known independence and I had known my own worth. Not that he was ever going to put me down. He did not, ever. But there were times when we saw things slightly differently. And I would speak my truth, and he would speak his truth. And I would speak my truth, and he would speak his truth. And after a bit of that, we would begin to laugh. And we would go to bed together. There was great love. There is great love with us. And out of that union, there was a daughter born. This, again, was not publicized and has not been written about, because, after all, he was to be pure and did not know anything of woman. And he and I would get together and we laugh about that. Because he knows woman very well. But as we could see, things were coming to a place of reckoning. Because the Holy Fathers in our tradition, the Jewish tradition, were getting more and more upset because he was drawing bigger and bigger crowds. And there were some of the rabbis who got into the place of humanhood and were a bit jealous and did not like what he was teaching, did not like the fact that he was becoming quite popular, and perhaps there were ones who were skipping out on the day, the holy day of the week, to go hear what Yeshua was talking about instead of being in the synagogue. So there were rumblings and mutterings, and then voices that got louder, and to the place where it was that he was being a rabble-rouser, because he did draw great crowds. And so he was brought before the judge, Pontius Pilate, you have the story in your holy writings, to defend himself. And he said, there is no defense that I can give you that will change your mind. If I did not say anything, the very stones would call out and tell you the truth of the matter. So he stood there and did not give defense because he knew that it was not going to change things. And then came the crucifixion. Now, he and I, in our quiet times, had talked to know that there was a very good chance that this is what would happen. And he shared with me that he had studied with masters who knew how to take the consciousness, the awareness of the body, out of the body to be at a certain distance above or around the body. And not to feel the pain, if there should be pain, And you have ones in this day and time who also have demonstrated that, to be able to take a sharp instrument to the body and not feel any pain, no association. So he said, Mary, Maria, I am going to endeavor to do that. So I knew that he had a plan. I knew that he had a procedure that he was going to try, because he had never done it all the way, and he wasn't really sure that he could do it. I mean, he was mentally sure, but not completely. So, as you have the story, he was taken up upon the hill and nailed to the wood. And there were miracles that happened at that time. Miracles of the one who had to pound the great spike into the hand. Miracle of forgiveness. Because Yeshua could look upon the one who was pounding the nail, the spike. It was not a small nail. And he could understand that the other one did not want to do it, but felt that he had to. Otherwise, he would be up on the cross. He could not disobey the orders, but he did not want to do it. And there was great love that was shared. And so he hung on the cross. And I share with you that the body that hung on the cross was not as your depictions show it, with the towel draped over the very private parts. It was as he came into the world, hanging there. It was to be degraded as great as they could do to the body. And so he hung there until he could breathe no more. Because crucifixion, painful as it is, does not kill. But the weight of the hanging brings the lungs and the thorax together to the place where there is not breathing. There cannot be the breath. And so it is suffocation. And this happened. And I stood watching this. And I prayed. I prayed as hard and as fervently as I knew to pray. I prayed in oneness with him. I prayed with everything, every fiber of my being, to know oneness with him, to join with him. And I tried not to see with human eyes. It was difficult, but I could do it. And I held on to the promise that he would come and find me and our daughter, if he possibly could. And you know the rest of the story. Yes, the decision was to leave the area after a certain amount of time, about a month and a half, 6 weeks or so. Because, you see, all of the multitudes, the friends of Yeshua, were being asked, because this rumor had gone about that he hadn't died on the cross and that he was alive still. And so there was a search sent out to find him, and his followers, disciples, ones who were close to him, were being questioned, even tortured, to tell where he might be found. If this was true, if he was still alive, they were going to try it again. And so in order to spare the ones who knew the truth or might not know the truth, but they might suspect, it was felt that we should leave the country and set the message out, send it out, that he had died or that he had left the country. Or as you have a saying, that Elvis has left the building. It was to save further pain to ones. So, having an uncle who had ships, there just happened to be one in port. We went upon the ship and went to what you know now as southern France. You have legends, and the legends are based on truth. The legends are true. And because he knew how to do the resurrection of bringing life back to a deceased body, which had been done before, eons of time before, but by masters, long forgotten, but yet true, he instilled in me an awe, as you would feel. And I wanted to know, this is where the story gets very interesting. You think it's been interesting so far. It has. I wanted to know how one would do resurrection. I wanted to know for myself. I knew how to keep the body young, because when we lived in France, we would know how to revitalize the body. That I knew how to do, and to stay seemingly the same age, so that we could live in the villages and so forth. But I did not know resurrection of a deceased body. And there was a feeling in my spirit that wanted to know it. And I would not be satisfied until I knew it. You will not find this written anywhere. You will have to ascertain the truth of it from your own heart. But I came back, reincarnated as Joan of Arc, was burned at the stake. New resurrection. Yay. Yes. So, I come to tell you in this day and time, you are the master, mistress of the physicality. You are in charge all the time of your body, of what you make. So watch your thoughts. And if something in the body is not the way you want it to be, visualize it, know it, accept it as your due. And you are due every good thing, D-U-E. It is owed to you by your inheritance of who and what you are. You have been having the workshops in this week, bringing to light, bringing to your remembrance who you are and tools for getting in touch with who you are and what you are. To resurrect your own spirit and to come alive in this day and time and to prove to yourself, I am the child of life. I am the child of spirit. I can do all things through the realization of my God self, my holy self. I can do all things. That is what propelled me into the incarnation and the most wonderful death of the body and resurrection. So that after that, as one would be brought together, seemingly as two, Yeshua and I, are one. for all time. You like a story with a happy ending? Yeah. This one has a happy ending. We travel together. We are always together. We laugh together. We celebrate each of you together. We are very happy as to what you are doing as seemingly individuals of the one spirit of life itself. We are very happy together and together with you as to what you are doing, realizing, bringing into fruition that which you have heard many, many lifetimes, that which you have put out in front of other ones. You have been the teachers. Take what you have heard this evening. Take what resonates with you. Do not worry about the fine points, because I know there are some who are going to say, well, that's quite a story, but it is true. Revel in it, because it is your story as well. I love that which we are. So be it. Jeshua says that it would be a good idea to have a short break, to collect yourself, to actually feel where you are. Yes. And then he has a few words before we finish this evening. Now, we continue. Yes. I hope, I know, I trust that the information that has been shared with you throughout this week gives you a more full picture of the human Christ of me, the human Yeshua. Because truly I wanted and asked for a human incarnation one more time. And if truth be told, that was not my first incarnation on Holy Mother Earth. There were others where I was just a quiet shepherd, communing with nature, with the sheep, with the stars. There were lifetimes when I was in the village as the certain shoemaker. Other lifetimes, quite human and quite, how do I put this? Unassuming. The one that I was called Yeshua, the one where I was called Rabbi, the one where I was called the Christ. That has been made a lot of fuss over. It was a fussy lifetime. Yeah. But truly, the lifetime that you are living, it is as important, as revelatory, as my lifetime, the one that is most famous of my lifetimes. The lifetime that you're living right now, every day opens up new vistas to you. Some of those vistas have been opened in this week that we have shared. Some understandings have come to be more clear by interacting with your brothers and sisters, by listening to the messages that sometimes sound a bit far out, and yet they touch your heart. This week has been a gift that you have given to yourself. This week will be remembered after you go back to your various dwelling places, and you will think upon something that has impacted you, or maybe several of the things that you have heard either in the evenings or during the day in the workshops, or just when you are speaking with another self of you. because truly you are all parts and pieces of each other. Wonderful gemstones, wonderful threads in the tapestry that I have talked about quite often. You are living a most wonderful artistic lifetime. And the smile that comes across your face, it is worth 1,000 words. The smile that comes from your eyes as they crinkle up, the words that come to support another one as you walk up along the path of life, those are truly the gems. The interactions that you have had in this week with each other, you will remember a long, long time, because truly you have touched another's heart and they have touched your heart. Because, beloved ones, you have been open. You have been open to receive. And as one is open to receive, more and more love flows in. And as you will give that love to other ones, it is replenished. For truly you cannot give to another one without having it flow through you. Blessed art thou, each and every one of you. Tomorrow, you will have another one of the sharings by a beloved brother of mine, a beloved son. You will then take all of the gems that have been shared with you, and we will meet in the evening for another round of the questions and answers. To make it a bit different on the motto, I will ask the questions, you will give the answers. We will do some of that. Yes. And now, beloved ones, have a good evening and night. Until we meet again, peace be with you. Thank you. Thank you. I know you can feel it, the love that he has for you. It is so alive. I know you can feel it. And it just pours out, and it's like a blanket of soft, soft, fuzzy, whatever. You know, and he wraps you in it. He loves you so much. He is so proud of you. Each and every one of you, because you are living your truth and you are sharing it with other ones. And when you go back after this week to wherever you go back to, it is, as he said to you on the first evening, you are not going to be, you are not the same as you were when you walked in here on Sunday or Monday or Wednesday or Tuesday or whatever. It's wonderful. Thank you for sharing with me. Thank you, everyone.